You know, everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket. It just may be the most rewarding to-do you do today.
Now, Podcast One brings you Spike's Car Radio. A downloadable Cars and Coffee, hosted by writer, comedian, and automotive enthusiast, Spike Ferriston. Now, here's Spike.
It's going to be a good one. Let's just start off, just a cold start, just like this. Look at this. These fucking phone calls. Why, are you on the no-call registry, Zuckerman?
I am, but it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
And it's nonstop. Like, this will be one of 10 calls today from all of these delightful cities that I like to visit, like Providence, Rhode Island. That was Hawthorne, California. And it just never stops. And I got on that do not call registry 2 weeks ago, and I'm still getting the calls.
My favorite is that I get calls for cruise. You want a cruise? I'm like, no, you want a cruise? I'm like, no, I didn't. You know, oh, well, do this. Give us your social security number. You got a free cruise.
Exactly. Yeah, we'll empty your bank account. And I got yesterday on my cell phone, may I speak to the head of the household? Oh. You're calling a fucking cell phone. This is not a household.
Yeah, I know. I always know I'm in trouble. Yeah. You know, may I speak with Michael Ferriston? And that's where I now go with it. I try to go with it and waste as much of their time as I can. Oh. And I had some – I answered that one. You know where they call you up and they go, there's a criminal complaint. It's a robot. It goes, there is a criminal complaint that's been filed against you. You will be going to jail. I hung on the phone for that one. And I got connected to some angry Middle Eastern guys who I said, look, I want to make this go away. How do I make this go away? Who do I pay? And they go, well, hold on. We'll put you on with the guy. And and he put me on with his boss. And he goes, well, there's a very big arrest record for you that's going to make it go away. You're going to have to pay. And I go, okay, I'd like to pay right now. And he kept asking for my credit card number. And I would go, okay, here it is. Okay, you ready? It's MasterCard. And they go, yes. I go, 5-4. Yes. And I go, that's it. 5-4. Why are you fucking wasting my time? And then he started screaming at me, and he screamed at me for a good 5 more minutes. And then I tried to reason with him. I said, well, why are you doing bad things in the world? Why don't you do some good things in the world? And he goes, so you do good things. Tell you what. What are you? You're white? I go, yeah. He goes, what nationality are you, Mr. Good Things? I go, mostly Irish. He goes, okay, like Conor McGregor? He goes, you know what happened to Conor McGregor in the Ultimate Fight last weekend? And he starts recapping the fight with that Russian guy. He goes, I'm going to be the Russian motherfucker that punches you in the face. It was so entertaining. This was like an hour of my life last week, Zuckerman. Anyway, it's you're listening to Jim Beaver.
Yay.
Paul Zuckerman. Jim Beaver is an accomplished off-road racer, motorsports on-air talent, and the host of the nationally syndicated Down and Dirty radio show. Jim, good to see you, my friend.
Yeah, good to see you. I was trying to think back. I know I had you on my show, I think, when you launched this podcast, like right around when you launched it.
Was it the podcast or Car Matchmaker? I thought it was Car Matchmaker.
I don't know. You and I were all over the grid when we talked because we've got a bunch of mutual friends. I know,
right.
Katie Osborne, Graham Rahal.
Like, right, yeah, right, we got, right.
Like, I don't know. We got on some tangent about Graham's G-Wagon at one point. I don't know. You never know where it's going to go.
Graham, yeah, he had that sparkly green G-Wagon.
Happy Graham.
Happy Graham. Yeah, he's hilarious. And you weren't you just talking about his aftermarket stainless steel exhaust and saying that you were going to put one on our GT3 Touring?
He what he did was he volunteered on Instagram. He suggested, and then a whole bunch of his competitors dogpiled him, saying their shit was better. So I had to stick up for him and say, if I'm doing one of these, I'm doing it through my friend Graham.
Do you think really that there's any better stainless steel exhaust sound? I mean, as long as you're getting a little more sound out of the exhaust on a GT3.
It reminds me of my
right?
79 Firebird, Formula Firebird, that I wanted to put headers on. And then I was always wondering if it actually worked. Like, you know, the first time you smoke dirt weed and you're like, am I high? Am I high? You don't know. If you don't know, it doesn't work.
I always just don't want to think about what I'm doing with a stock exhaust. Where am I putting that? I don't want to store another thing. That's what always stops me.
You know what's golden on the stock exhaust? Now, I know most of the stuff's cat back, but those cats are worth so much money.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, well, my family's got a Ford dealership.
That's right.
Literally,
one of the oldest Ford dealerships in Arizona. 102 years old, this Ford dealership.
It wasn't meant to be a plug, but seriously, we replace exhausts, and we get people that will come and buy those for, like, the platinum that's inside the packing.
Really?
Those cats are worth, like, money.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
What are they worth?
All depends. Like, you get one of those big, like, off a one-ton truck, you know what I mean, that's that long. And I don't know. They have a way to weigh it and, like, I guess extract out of, like, the packing. And
the platinum.
I don't know. Yeah, the platinum out of it. And I don't know. I mean, we've got up to, like, three or four cats, like, $300-$400 before just – out of the value.
Ferriston, next time one of these guys calls, tell him you want to go into the cat business.
The platinum business.
Yes.
I want to hear about this old Ford dealership. What is the oldest Ford dealership? If yours is 102 years old.
One in Flagstaff. We were actually talking about Flagstaff.
Yeah.
I think they got us clipped by a couple years.
Really?
Yeah. So.
And they were selling the Model T, I would guess, way back then.
Because we were 1916 when we were founded, so I would assume they were probably right around 1910.
And it was your relatives that founded
this. Actually my great-grandfather.
What was his name?
Dan Beaver. Yep.
Dan Beaver. What a genius
Beaver
was.
Yeah. So
look what he left.
We're just a railroad town.
Can you sing Daniel Boone?
Yeah.
Huh? Daniel Beaver is king.
But amazing that this guy had the prescient, made this prescient decision to get a dealership and hand it down so many generations.
Yeah. Well, I think it was on accident, to be honest with you. Like, he was actually a railroader. And the railroad went on strike, and he got stuck in this town. He was actually from Prescott, and he got stuck in this town for, like, 3 months.
Uh-huh.
And so he, like, started working on cars just because he had no job, and he wrote a letter, I guess, to my great-grandma and said, hey, man, like, I'm not coming home. I got no way to get home. The railroad's on strike, and so I got no job. So he took he just started, like, working on old cars and wrenching and things like that, and then this whole dealership thing kind of popped up.
Well, how did it pop up? Did Henry Ford just show up?
No, I guess they were working on cars and stuff like that. And then back then, like, he would actually, once the railroad got back up and running, he would actually, all the cars showed up in LA. And so he would take the train to LA and get a Model T, and then he would drive it across the desert back to literally. And we're talking, this thing was like a couple week trip to make
this whole deal
happen back then, right? He would drive the Model T across the desert back to this small town in Arizona, and then he would sell it.
Right.
And then when he sold that, he would take the train back to LA and he'd buy another one and drive it across the desert and then sell it.
No kidding.
Yeah, so we're talking infancy, and so that happened, and I think we're unofficially a Ford dealer for like 10 years as this was going on. And then at some point, Ford's just like, yeah, we'll make you a real dealer.
And did they eventually put those cars on the train and get them there?
Eventually the trains came in, and then and the transportation got ironed out, and it wasn't him actually, you know, taking a train to L.A. to drive cars back across the desert. But that's how it all happened. We're talking
early
1900s, you know?
I drove a Model A in the desert. I was so surprised at how well these things handled. They're like the first 4x4, right?
Because roads sucked back then.
Right.
They didn't have roads. That was the whole point of the Model
T. Those things were durable, man.
Yeah, they are. It's impressive.
And the original Beaver guy must have been durable, too. Because that wasn't
his back probably wasn't so good. But
yeah, amazing. Somebody just reached out to me on Instagram and asked me this very same situation. They said, what if I were to take these cars, these 911s I'm finding in the Midwest, and bring them to the West Coast? Do you think I could make some money? And I said, yeah, I think you could. I think if you're buying in the winter and you're looking in the nooks and crannies of the Midwest for some of these old cars, yeah, I think you could. Don't you think if you bring a 911 to L.A., it's suddenly a little bit more valuable, right?
Okay, maybe. I don't know. Should we try it?
Sure. I mean, don't you think you'd be willing to pay at least 10% more for a car right here in
Los
Angeles?
Well, I would agree with you that I think the dealerships in the Midwest that get their allocation of let's say, a Targa 4 GTS.
No, I'm talking about old cars.
Okay, old cars.
Old cars.
I would say
you buy in your neighbor's garage.
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. If you've got a 911 in the middle of nowhere, Iowa, right, how many buyers do you have?
Right.
If you've got one here in L.A., how many buyers do you have? You know, there's just more buyers here, right?
Yeah. But I also think we'll pay a little more for it.
Yeah.
Anything here. It's like, you know, a hotel, a restaurant. I'll pay a little more for that dinner.
Yeah.
I think you could do it. I think it's going to be a pain in the ass. to do.
It's not a job I would want, but no. I think there is money in it for somebody.
People have been writing. We're going to answer some questions today. We forgot to do it last time, Zuckerman. We had about 100 questions, and I forgot to ask all of them. So.
Oh, well, fuck them.
No, don't say that about our lovely listeners.
I'm in a mood. What do you want?
You're in a mood? Why? What's happening? What's wrong?
You know, Ferris, in my house burned down.
Yes, I know it burned down.
In this case, it didn't happen to other people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a tragedy. Lots of people died.
It's horrible. Like, I mean,
structures
it's just
burned. It's bad news. Let's talk about Dax Shepard, Travis Pastrana, Tanner Faust. Now, you sent me some possible talking points without a reference.
Yeah,
but I love these names. I watch Travis Pastrana all the time. I just watched him the other day. He was on in his backyard on a motorcycle doing double flips and had a drone that I think was chasing him, like an automated drone that was following him around on the track. It's an amazing piece of video.
Travis
and Dax seems like a guy like you, an off-roader and a camper and a woodsy 4x4 nut job guy, muddy. Yeah.
Dax, he is the anti-celebrity. Well, I swear, he is so not a celebrity that's a celebrity.
Well, what were you doing with
so, that? So I'm kind of like you. I mean, I've got a lot of friends that are higher profile and for whatever reason. I've been an off-road racer for, a couple of decades now since, time I was like 20. So it was one of those, I have this contract with Polaris. And I'm like, how can we do something fun where I can bring these rad people that are my friends and take them off road racing. And so I thought up this idea that we called it the Star Car. And so we built out this Razor, and I mean, it was like $100,000+ Razor build. And it's a proper race car. And my whole idea, we got a film crew.
What did you change about a regular Razor?
Well, for the desert, literally, I think they look like a Razor on the outside. And then other than that, it's just a pure – you take basically the chassis and you cut everything off above the basic frame rail and throw it away. So we take the skins off, you'd look at this and be like, I don't know how much of that Razor's left.
Rejuvenation.
A lot of platinum.
The engine's still there. It is a spec engine, right? So – but yeah, we built up this race car. We got film crew and started out. We, had Tanner Faust come and race with me, and then we had Jolene Van Vuit, which she's Travis Pastrana's sidekick. She's first female to backflip a dirt bike.
Right, right.
Her and I have been friends for a long time, so I got her involved because I feel like you always need to have a female presence in motorsports. Whatever, it's just kind of one of my things. Like I feel like a lot of times women don't get their due, and in this industry,
absolutely,
so,
right, right.
So I definitely wanted her involved, and yeah. So we had Tanner Faust, we had Alyssa Ronick with ESPN. She came out and rode in the car with me.
Did she get sick?
No, she was actually a phenomenal co-driver. Like, literally so good. Like, I would hire her next week to co-drive a race with me.
We always get sick when we're passengers in racing cars. That's crazy. Why I said it. Now, what do you mean co-driver? What is she doing in this?
So, in the desert, we've got, anywhere from – well, actually, Baja 1000 is going on this weekend, and I'm not racing it. So you go anywhere from, we've got, 20-mile loops at some of these races, to, Baja 1000, where it's 1,000 miles that
– So it's navigating.
So she's navigating. We've got a GPS screen in there, and she's calling off, hey, we've got a booby trap up here, big ditch, big rocks, left-hand corner, right-hand corner. And when you're in the dust and you can see, 5 feet in front of your car, that's crucial because you're racing you're blind. So the navigator actually does a whole lot of work.
I have a friend who races Baja. Craig Christie. He's also running our editorial facility for my company. But he goes up and he does this race. And he tells us there's lots of death in this race.
Yes.
There's lots of death. Has that been your experience that there are bystanders and animals and people die?
In Baja, yes. racing in the United States is a little more controlled.
Why can't they keep people off the track outside of the United States?
You know what? We love racing in Baja. It breaks my heart. I'm not actually down there racing right now. But the fans down there are just next level fans.
They love it, right?
They absolutely love it. They eat, they sleep, they breathe it. I don't want to say they don't really have professional sports in Mexico, but especially Baja, off-road racing, that's their sport. That's it's what they live for down there. And so you get guys like Robbie Gordon and these people like that are these main, they're their superheroes down there, So they're just passionate. And, and you're also out in the middle of the sticks in Mexico, and these people have these little villages, and, a lot of them may not even have power at this point in time. They might be running off generators, no internet, no TV. So
are they cool with a race coming through? Oh,
they love it, but they're so passionate they want to build extra big jumps, and they want to bury refrigerators in the course, and they want to dig ditches that you weren't aware of.
Really?
So,
but is that sabotage or celebration?
It's making it better.
it could be looked at both ways.
So you may hit a refrigerator, and you may not know.
Yes, right. Exactly, and you may end up on your roof.
And how is it that people? I understand, like a dog running across the track or an animal. You just when you're racing, you just have to plow straight through. That's just how you do it, or you crash. But when it's a person, what happens? Yeah.
No, and when it's people like
you haven't run over anybody, have you?
No. I've had some close calls down in Mexico, but no.
But
no.
And what is it from? Just people on a turn, just cheering or holding?
Yeah,
up?
Well, and they want to get close, and I mean, they, you know, they're down there, especially like Baja. I mean, that race stretches a day, so people they get a little alcohol in their system, right? They're
having
a good time watching the race,
that's
and then,
right.
Then they decide they get really brave and they want to lay underneath jumps and have the cars jump over them. And, It gets entertaining. I don't want to say entertaining. It gets interesting. But as a driver, I mean, it's one thing I say the difference in racing off-road in the States and in Mexico. In the States, like, I can concentrate on the race course and the race. I don't have to worry about the exterior, you know, things going on. Well, you race in Baja, and you've got to have, like, that sixth sense. You know, you're looking, you know, peripheral vision's got to be on point. And it's actually going to be interesting. So Alexander Rossi, Indy 500 champion, he's down there. I talked with him last week. I had him on my show. But he's actually going and racing the 1,000 this weekend. And he was just like, I have no idea what I'm in store for. I'm like, I want to talk with you after the race. Because I'm like, we should have done this interview after the race.
Yeah,
but I'm interested to see a guy like that who, you know, he's very much the same background as Graham Rahal, right? To see what he thinks of Baja after he goes down there and races.
Well, Rossi also very put together. The haircut, getting cut every 2 weeks, right? The clothes, everything. He's in top
very
shape.
Very clean, refined.
Very clean, very refined.
That Formula One did good for Rossi, right?
And this is just outlaw, dirty business that he's up to. It will be really interesting. I just wonder, just even the bumps, what he'll do with the bumps. Because most of those guys who race cars, you know, they like a quiet car on the road because their race car is too hot, right, and too noisy. So they'll get a Tesla so it's quiet when they're on the road. So this is a level beyond like what they're used to. That'll be really interesting to hear what he thinks of that course and
off-road
how well he does.
Are loud, rough, obnoxious. Like it's
Do you think he feels a lot of pressure to win?
He's on a really, really good team. And it's not, you know, the trophy truck is like the top division.
Right.
And then there's a couple of divisions below that. So he's not racing against, you know what I mean, the top guys. So he's, he's got a good shot to win his class. And he's on a factory Honda team. That's, I think, the tie-in was with Honda. You know, they brought him on board for this. So I think, you know, it's one of those, it's a long race. If he doesn't make any mistakes, he doesn't need to drive 100%. If he just drives 80%, doesn't. You know, run over a boulder and rip an arm off the truck. Like, I think they'll be all right.
What's your one piece of advice you give somebody who's going to race Baja?
Going to race in Baja?
Yeah, do this race. Give me the one big thing everybody needs to know if you're going to do this.
Honestly,
I know there's a lot, but what's the one big one?
You know, biggest thing is just, honestly, you've got to finish. You got to be aware of what's going on around you. That's the biggest thing. You got to be aware. Your vision's got to be on point. You know, you can't get distracted. Just getting to the finish line at Baja is a win in itself. So, you know,
some guys are doing this on motorcycle too, right?
Yeah. Some guys are doing it by themselves on a motorcycle. Like, you know, most of these guys are like on driving teams, you know, and even like I do Vegas to Reno, that's 550 miles and I split driving with somebody and this guy's on a motorcycle. Like, who wants to go and race a motorcycle 1,000 miles by, you know, you're on a motorcycle for like a day, like straight.
Yeah, that's
crazy. That's another level of nutty.
You'll
what happened?
Found
to-
in 40,000 years, like that guy up in the Alps.
I don't know that I could ride a dirt bike 100 miles. You know
what happens to your kidneys in this situation?
I wear a kidney belt. And I got a bad back from an old football injury, so I literally wear a kidney belt and everything else.
Can you believe this, Zuckerman? That you're complaining about sports seats in a Porsche, and he's got a back injury, and he's doing the Baja 1000. What kind of baby?
He's a racer.
Are you?
I'm a baby.
You're a big baby.
I'm a big baby. Yeah.
Why not get a kidney belt like he has and drive around with
under my suit?
Yeah,
a suit and a kidney
belt. The good thing about kidney belts too is they're slimming, right? You can get them really cinched up, and it looks like you lose five or ten pounds. Not saying that you need to lose any weight, buddy, but I'm just saying like it's like the male version of Spanx.
It's a new version of the three-piece suit. The third piece is the kidney belt.
But a kidney belt could work. I mean, we could call it something else. We could call it the sports seat belt, but it's
some the redstone belt.
No, call it like the Z belt or something like that.
The sex type of belt.
But it could actually work. I really want to figure this out for you. I really want to make it happen. Anyway, we got to take a break. We'll be right back with Jim Beaver.
When you're under the hood, ever notice how often you use Continental belts? There's a reason for that. Continental is one of the world's largest original equipment suppliers for the automotive industry. Automakers from around the world insist on Continental for original equipment belts. The U.S. Big Three, BMW, VW, all of them. Over 30% of all new vehicles sold in North America. You know what that says? It says Continental knows OE because they are OE. Continental's OE Technology Series multi-V belts for the automotive aftermarket are precision engineered for perfect fit, form, and function with a true OE pedigree. They're the belts engines already know. So you can confidently spec Continental's multi-V belts. There's one for 98% of vehicles on the road today. You might not know it, but Continental is also a leader in automotive technology, electronics components for things like autonomous driving and accident-free zones. That focus on innovation is in every product they make, including OE Technology Series aftermarket belts.
You're listening to Spike's Car Radio.
Now we're back. Look at how fast that break was. It was as if it didn't really happen. You have a podcast here, right? Which is the reason you've graced us with
yes,
your presence
got,
here in this beautiful studio. Project
yep.
Action.
Yep.
Tell us all about it. What is Project Action? I don't know anything about it.
Project Action is what is it now and what has it started out to be? It started out to be just a place where I talk with like people in action sports and anything kind of action-oriented, race car drivers and stuff like that. I've got my other show that's all motorsports and race car and auto people, but now it's turned into me just interviewing rad people. Like we get actors on, I don't know, actors, musicians, athletes, celebrities, action sports people, race car drivers. It's just honestly, I don't know what it is. It's just the podcast that I keep doing and I love it. And I get to interview people I find interesting.
What's wrong with Travis Pastrana that he continues to put his life at risk? When I think of Travis, I feel a paternal instinct with him, right? I believe he broke his back when he was 15.
He broke his back, his pelvis. He's really
and
suffered
I start,
significant
and I
injuries.
And I find that I worry about Travis Pastrana a lot. Even watching this video a couple days ago, I want to sit him down and go, enough, really. Take care of yourself because later on you're going to end up like Zuckerman here and you're not going to be able to sit
well,
in the car.
I'll tell you my thoughts on Travis, but we've got to earmark this space because I've got a really cool Travis Pastrana story that not many people have.
Well, then just tell us that. Tell us the story. That's going
to
be better.
Okay, so he was involved with me in Star Car last year. Him, me, and Jolene went to do Vegas to Reno, you know, 600 miles across the entire state of Nevada. So, you know, we have this bet, whoever, you know, Travis is starting and Jolene, then I was going to be the anchor because I drive off-road, so I was going to be the guy that drives at night. So we have this bet immediately, you know, Travis, everything's got to be a bet with Travis. So he's like, all right, if somebody breaks the car and we're unable to finish, whoever's driving when the car breaks, they owe the other people $1,000.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, all right, I'm not worried about me breaking the car. I'm like, this is going to be an easy grand. Travis is going to destroy this thing, right?
We've heard this story.
A
story like this with another guy.
Racer behavior.
Yeah. So anyways, Travis jumps in the car. He does the first, like, 150 miles. Jolene goes in. She does, like, 200 miles. Travis does another 100, and then I'm supposed to get in and do the anchor, like which is like the last 200 miles, right? And by the time Travis had some problems, he had driven the crap out of the car. So he'd had some problems. I get in the car, and I'm supposed to do the 200 miles to finish. Meanwhile, it's already like midnight.
Mm-hmm.
And so I literally, we change the tires, we fuel the car. I jump in. I'm like, all right, it's midnight. I'm ready to go. 200 miles. Let's do this. We're, you know, see you guys in Reno. I go 10 feet, and the car quits. Travis, I look, and Travis is sitting there literally, like, jumping up and down because and I'm like, so we go and find out, like, literally the frame is broken in half, and it's night, so you can't see this.
Right.
Frame is broken in half from Travis. Like, we've got sensor failures, all this stuff. He didn't tell me when he brought it in. This thing was, like, on its last leg.
That's great.
So we get out of the car, and we assess this thing, and we decide, man, like, there's no way this car is going to go 200 miles. I'm going to be stuck out here, you know, next to aliens at Area 51. So, you know, so he's sitting there. He's like, Jimmy, you owe me $1,000. And I'm like, Trav, I drove the car 10 feet, buddy. And he's like, no, it broke under your power.
You were in it, right.
And so I look at that, and then he's like, well, meanwhile, we're in this town called Gabs, Nevada, which nobody knows where Gabs, Nevada is.
Is that 1P or 2?
Yeah.
3.
So it's 50 miles down a one-way road. And it's a mining town. So you literally, it's one way in, one way out. It's one road. And it's like a 50 miles down this road to get to Gabs. There's like a population of 50.
I want
to
go there. There
there's a population of like 50 people in Gabs. They've got one bar
How
there.
How many are on meth? A full two-thirds
I'd
of the population?
I'd say 99.9% probably. So anyways, they've got one bar in town, and the town is so small. And Trav's like, hey, I spotted a bar when we came in. We got to go over there. So we get there, and it's a double-wide trailer. And this is the bar. And all right, so we're going to party in Gabs, Nevada at the double-wide trailer. So he's like, we got to discuss this bet, you know, and he's like, I really think you owe me $1,000. So anyways, we go in there and our crew shows up and everything else. And, you know, here's Travis Pastrana walking in at Gabs, Nevada, you know, and people are going nuts. And so
people of Gabs know Travis Pastrana.
There was a couple of the younger ones that did. Some of the older ones heard from the kids, this guy's a celebrity. So we,
right.
You know, so anyways, we sit there and we proceed to discuss this bet for the next 4 hours. Over every kind of drink and deep fried food you can get in a bar in Gabs, Nevada. So anyways, Trav goes, I owe you some kind of money. So anyways, he's like, you don't owe me $1,000. I'm like, I got to give you something, Trav. I'm a man of my word. And he's like, well, just give me $100. So I sign over a $100 bill in Sharpie and it's like, fuck you, Travis. Was basically what it was. So anyways, he's like, so that was what that happened. But we've got to square up with this bill in Gabs, Nevada, right? So Travis like, I'm covering everything for everybody. And I'm like, yeah, you know, and he said that when we walked into the bar and I'm like, yeah, this is going to be bad. So we've drank him out of all kinds of
expensive can it be to drink in Gabs?
Well,
we're talking about $9.
I'm like, if this was in Vegas or L.A., we're talking probably $5,000 to $10,000 bill.
Right.
If we're talking, you know what I mean, any other normal bar, we're at least looking at $1,500, $2,000.
Really? Right? Well, that's a lot of drinking.
Yeah. No, it was a train wreck. there was a point in time where Travis was on a three-wheeler of some locals and doing wheelies down Main Street. I mean, it was
– I want to go to Gabs. Now Gabs sounds like fun, Zuckerman. Gabs Death sounds like Gabs. Our kind of place. Could I wear my gun to Gabs? They wouldn't have a problem with that, right? Motorcycles and guns.
You
would have
fit
a good time.
If you don't have a gun, you're out of place in
Gabs. That's right.
I think.
Oh, so, we're going, Zuckerman. So,
anyways, we go up and the bar owner and his wife are there, and the bar owner's wife is the bartender. And we look, and Travis, like, you know, he's slurring his words and everything, and we're both kind of seeing triple. And we go, what do we owe? You know, and the guy looks around, and he starts looking at the shelf, and I'm like, there's no liquor bottles left on the shelf, you know? And he starts looking, he goes back to the freezer, and all his deep fried frozen stuff is gone. Because that's the only thing to eat in Gabs, Nevada.
Shrimps. Right, did you guys eat all the shrimps?
So he walks up, and he looks at his wife. He looks at us. And he just kind of shakes his head and he goes, you owe me $67.
Oh, come on.
And Travis and I look at each other and Travis goes, $67. And the guy goes, looks about like a $67 night to me. So Travis pulls out a $100 bill. It wasn't the one that I signed him. You know, go fuck off, Travis. And he hands it to the bartender, the lady whose husband is standing right there. And she looks at it and she goes, well, let me go get you some change. Travis goes, no, that's all right. You keep the change. And she goes, I can't keep that kind of money, Mr. Pastrana. And Travis goes, what are you talking about? She goes, we've never had a tip that large in the history of this bar. She's like, I have to get you some change. And Travis goes, seriously, you can keep the $33.
Right.
But it was just, I'm like,
so
oh,
charming.
My God.
Well, if they have a synagogue, I'm moving there.
Let's go to Gab, Zuckerman.
You could probably own the whole town for a couple hundred dollars.
That's what we tip the valet at Ciccone's before we even eat when we're here. I love that. Boy, you just painted a beautiful picture that reminds me of everything I love about.
How many people are Googling Gabs, Nevada on Google Earth right now?
Well, it's just about being out in the world where just without any regulation, cops, and just having fun and
nobody's
bombing
jaded.
Around in the desert and people are nice and, you know, everything's
everybody
just
had a good time. Nobody got hurt.
But imagine what happens when the motorcycle gang rolls into Gabs. The bad guys come down that 50-mile road and there's no cops anywhere. Now imagine
what's probably
going
got
on.
One cop in the whole town, I would assume. You'd think there's got to be somebody there, right?
Well, you said there's only 50 people in Gabs. Do you think one of them's a cop? I bet there's no cop.
It's like one of those bad 70s movies.
Yeah, it
terror
is.
Terror on the road. Terror in a small town.
Yeah, I bet Gabs has a lot of good stories to tell.
Gabs.
That could be another podcast for you, Mr. Beavers. Gabbin and Gabs. When did you realize that you had a facility for this, that you had a talent for this podcasting thing?
Honestly, It was, well, I was a broke race car driver, right? And this was like 2010. I had a trophy truck in the garage, no money to run it, you know? And it's one of those, like, I'm going, how the hell, how do you get sponsorship to go racing? Like, I can't get anything, right? And I'd done a previous year, I did a radio interview with somebody, and my sponsors that I had were like, oh, that's amazing. You know, we got so much value out of that. And I started thinking, I'm like, well, if they got value out of me, like, being on, you know, doing a 15-minute segment on a radio show, like, why don't I just do radio and then I can give it to them every week?
Right.
Well, and, you know, but how do you go and get national syndication agreements? And podcasting was there, but it was it's not where it was today back in 2010, 2011, right? So I started doing some, you know, I decided immediately, I was like, nobody, you couldn't get any kind of money for doing a podcast back back then. You had to call it radio because people understood radio. They didn't understand podcasts like they do today. So I started an online radio show that was actually really just a podcast, but I kind of did it live, and it was horrible. I mean, it was freaking horrible. But people actually, like, I think we had 27 people tune in the first episode.
Right.
But it just steamrolled from then. And then actually, Ken Block is a good friend of mine. And I had an IOU with Ken Block for something that, you know, I'd helped him out with Ford on a business thing. And so I called Ken and I said, hey, buddy, I said, I've got this new radio show. Yeah, I heard you started something up. And I'm like, would you be my guest? And he's like, yeah, I owe you one. I'll be your guest. So here's this kid. I didn't have much of a social following at that point. I had a horrible radio show, but I've got Ken Block on, who is Mr. Gymkhana, Mr.
Yeah, yeah.
500 million views, whatever. So Ken Block comes on your show, and then you are established immediately by de facto. So then after that, it was like just all downhill. The listeners came in with Ken Block.
All
then,
downhill.
Downhill the good way.
Yeah, but no, I mean, so that was kind of how it got started. But honestly, the whole thought was, is how as a race car driver do you get sponsorship? And now, you know what I mean? I'm doing radio. I'm doing television. I'm doing all this stuff. Well, and I'm racing.
It
you
says
know
here the Down and Dirty Radio Show is airing on 200 AM FM networks right now in the United States and 500 networks in 177 countries. Oh, you're on Armed Forces Network,
yes,
too. That's really
probably
cool.
Out of everything, that's one of the things I'm most proud of just because I've got a lot of friends in the military.
Yeah,
get,
yeah.
You know, troops will send you emails or contact you through the website. Hey, listen to your show on AFN. Thank you. You know, and like, to me, that's where
it's
at.
It's the best.
Yeah,
we used to
the
send
best.
Them the season of Car Matchmaker, advanced season, send it off to them and release it a month early to them so they could watch it on DVDs. all right. Let's take a quick break, and then we're going to do listener questions, of which there are many. We'll be right back with Spike's Car Radio. Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up your first date, luxury package you got after a big promotion, or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories now, with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car's worth when it's time to sell or trade it in. Just go to TrueCar, simply enter your license plate number, and watch how your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof? Yep. Watch as they bump up your value. High mileage? You know it. You already knew it was going to cost you, but now you know how much it dings your wallet, so you can plan ahead. Once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. True cash offer not available in all areas.
You're listening to Spike's Car Radio.
And here we are. All right, let's Chris. It's always hard with these questions because it's always Instagram handles, so bear with me in the names. This is Christopher Lyon. No, that's not so bad. Let's turn the tables on the Car Matchmaker. I want to hear Jim's recommendations for three off-road vehicles for Spike and hear which one Spike wants to drive first. And this is good because they're like we were talking about before this podcast began. I grew up in the woods. I grew up with canoes. I was an off-roader, motorcycler. I used to drive a Hodaka Combat Wombat two-stroke. I like
you're
this
a dirt
stuff.
Bike rider.
I'm a dirt biker, but right. I was a dirt biker without means. I always had to borrow my friend's Honda XR 250s and things. I didn't have a motorcycle. My mom was a nurse. She wouldn't let me have them. So what would you recommend for me now? Now a man of means.
We're talking stuff you can go to a dealership.
I'm going to go to Gorman. I'm going to take this to Gorman, and I'm going to have some fun with it. So it doesn't matter what it is. What vehicle will I have the most fun with in Gorman?
Well, obviously the Ford Raptor's got to be on the top of the list.
Really?
Right? Yeah, you got to. Yeah.
I love Raptors.
Yeah, Raptors are awesome, okay, especially the new ones. So.
So what? I would just take a stock Raptor.
Stock Raptor, you can actually take and do pretty much anything you want with it.
Okay.
Go anywhere. So
there's one. Okay.
I would say Ford Raptor has definitely got to be on the top of the list.
He's got a Ford dealership. Do you see that?
Sucker? Yeah, no, but, well, I mean, there's some rad stuff that's out there. I mean, you know, you start looking.
You at... happen to pick my favorite truck, all right? I'm not, don't argue so with me. I'm telling you, I love this choice.
I mean, you got
how are you going to beat that?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you just want to, I mean, there's some rad stuff. Like, I love Range Rovers and G-Wagons and stuff like that, but are you really going to go
I have
do
a Range
hard...
Rover Sport.
Yeah, are you gonna... right now. I love the sports.
Yeah. But I want something kind of like you. I want something, you know, Baja 1000 vehicles.
Well,
this doesn't have to be something I can put a license plate on.
Okay.
But let's stick
with
the Ford
obviously
Raptor
the new
one.
Polaris Razors, especially the Turbo S, those things are amazing.
Tell me why I want that.
Why you want that?
Because
it's got long travel. I mean, it's basically like a miniature trophy truck, right, from, you know, from the factory. So,
yeah.
You know, it's like.
How fast does that go?
They'll go about 80, I think.
Oh, shit. And,
but, I mean, you can go through 3 foot whoops, you know, pretty darn quick.
Have you seen one of those things underway?
Yeah.
They are so fucking cool.
And when what happens when they roll?
Well, I've rolled my fair share of them, and I'm still – I'm talking to you, Spike. So,
so they get they have a roll bar.
Yeah, no, they've got a full roll cage, four-point harnesses.
Okay,
and,
I like that too. I like that too. What's my third? What's my
third
car?
Oh, third one. I don't know, man. Where do we go here? You know what? If we're, I'm going to toss up. I'm going to give you four. I mean, you can't go wrong with a Jeep of any kind, right? Everybody's
okay.
Gonna,
right.
Well, I'm going to give you five. We got it. Jeeps, old Broncos. I love vintage Broncos, like 70s Broncos.
Okay, those are three. Okay.
70s Broncos, I'm a massive fan of those. Jeeps of any kind. And then what did I say I was going to give you five? Ah, we got to go with the
no,
old.
No, three is all you really needed.
Well,
now,
how about
I'm
an
confused.
Old Hummer H1, too? Like, I'm talking H1
those
Hummer.
Are great. Those are great. I drive occasionally a military spec Hummer that my friend has that he get registered, and it's super fun. All right,
they lost me when they went to like H2, H3s.
Yep, I know.
I was like,
and they're
no,
super wide on the road. They're fun. But all right, there's a lot of good choices. I'm going to forgo the vintage stuff because I have a 71 Series 2A, all right, that covers a lot of those bases. Also, the new Ranger, forget that.
Yeah.
The you had me right at the very first suggestion.
First
the
one.
Ford Raptor. I want a jacked up Ford Raptor. I've driven them. They're lovely. I've driven them around the city. That's what I want.
Yeah.
Let's go. Set me up with the old Ford dealership. Let's get a pickup truck today, Zuckerman.
Why not? Because we're going to get the friends and family. What's that package? The plan?
Oh, they do.
Plan
have.
X, plan something.
If you want a Ford Raptor, let me know.
They do. They have that.
What do they call that plan that
what
you get
when plan?
You're.
What is the Ford family
got,
plan?
There's a couple different ones. There's A, D, Z, and X.
And so what do you have? You have an A?
I'm a D plan.
And is that the best?
D and A are the same, basically.
And
one
what does that
one is for actually people that own dealerships and their family members. And
right.
Then A plan is for Ford corporate employees.
Wow. So you just end up paying for the gas, right? The truck is free. That's the plan
they
I want.
They pay you
all
to
right.
drive the truck.
This gentleman, father to four girls. I don't know if I would make that your Instagram handle, sir. So right there. I would change that. I've got a blue paint to sample GT3 Touring. Well done. With carbon bucket seats and steel for the feel brakes. Why did you and Z go with sofas? He's talking about the 18-way seats. He calls them sofas. And PCCB. Well, first of all, it's a touring package, so you want a touring seat, right? Didn't think of that, did you? I agree with you. I like these carbon bucket seats a lot. I feel like I'm sitting in a really crispy baseball glove that holds me when I race the car. But if you want to go with the touring, you go with an 18-way seat. Also, Zuckerman's back. The PCCB. Now, Zuckerman, this hits on a hot-button issue this week that our GT3 Touring is at Beverly Hills Porsche, where they are diligently trying to take the brake squeal out of one of the wheels, two of the wheels, actually. And, you know, I know what you're thinking right now. Spike, these ceramic brakes, they squeal. Porsche made a little video. It's a racing brake. They're not supposed to squeal like a Mack truck. They're not supposed to squeal that I have to roll my windows up. They're not supposed to squeal that the good people of Brentwood, California are turning on sidewalks and putting their hands up to their ears, Porsche. So I don't know. I think... From now on, Zuckerman,
we go steal
brakes.
All
and
right.
I and I've talked to some of our buddies about this, and they're saying that we're late to the game. That's why we've been ordering steel brakes. Your thoughts, Mr. Zuckerman?
I will tell you that in the 997, the ceramics had much less squeak than the steel GT3 brakes.
Yes.
They used certain pads on the GT3s for the steel brakes that were much noisier than regular pads. And the ceramics were better. But in this 991, it's the opposite.
It used to be, like I had a 996 GT3 with steel brakes, okay? And then I went to ceramics because I didn't want the squeal, I didn't want brake dust, and I wanted lighter brakes. Those are the three main reasons, right? Now I'm not sure what I'm doing here because now this noisy break is hurting my enjoyment of this beautiful, beautiful car.
And you know what the worst thing is? When they tell you at the dealership or at service department, spray some simple green. On the
WD-40.
Right? Like, okay, really? I just spent $200,000 and I'm going to be walking around with a bottle of Simple Green and spray.
Soylent Green. Put it on there. By the way, that doesn't work.
Grab you by the neck and spray Simple Green in your open mouth. See how that works.
Well, I will tell you right now that the Beverly Hills Porsche dealership and their crew are working very hard. They are very aware of what we do for a living, Mr. Zuckerman. They are going to great lengths to eliminate this. I have the full confidence of the company and the dealership, and I know they're going to do a great job. By the way, they have a GT2 RS for sale if anybody wants one.
Really? How much?
It's there right now. It's up there. It's 140, 150 over sticker.
Is it a Weissacker?
It's silver with a Weissack. Yeah, yeah.
Big number.
Is that – it seems lower – over sticker than any of these other cars.
They're putting a lot of these cars out there, but 140 over sticker is still a healthy.
Maybe I have that price wrong.
What about
another car I'm obsessed with, the GT 350R? How much were those selling for over sticker? I love those cars. You could sell me one of those cars too.
Well, those ones are pretty tough to get a hold of, but
why? Why couldn't?
That's the question, right? Why? I mean, Raptors.
Do you have one? Do you own one?
No.
I think that new Mustang is so lovely to drive. I just love the way it sounds. It's just a great car.
I think the 350R, I mean, I've seen them from, you know, I don't know, ballpark over sticker. I've seen them at, you know, 25 at, you know, sometime. I don't know.
They're still selling like that. They're still hard
to
get.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some small dealers that got stuck with one. Not stuck with them, but some small town dealers, and they were trying to get rid of them to other dealers at like 5 over sticker, you know. So
should we get one of those, Ferriston?
How many of those did they make? Well, that's
that
I'm
one going. I don't know. I'm going to have to dig deep in that.
What's
one.
Your
I don't
big
know
seller in the Mustangs?
I don't know. See, we're a small town dealer. Honestly, the big one for us is just a standard regular Mustang GT, you know. And the thing about it's great about a Mustang GT is they're more than capable. You know, they're a fun car to drive, but the aftermarket's so crazy. So you can get basically a base Mustang GT, and then you can do whatever the heck you want with it. You know, and I think that's a lot of people like to go that route because you're not overpaying for one of the special ones, and you kind of build your own, and you know, you put your own wheel and tire packages and your own performance upgrades, and so I think a lot of people go that way, just because you get to personalize it. It's more you, you know.
What do you like driving? You missed a race car. Do you like driving Mustangs? I'm going to put you on the spot.
I love driving Mustangs. I'm actually also, weird enough, I'm a Subaru ambassador, so I've got a brand new WRX STI in the garage,
great
too.
Cars.
So
they have the best color palette of any manufacturer
those are
right
amazing.
Now.
Amazing. I absolutely love – it's just a fun car to drive.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, there's certain things, obviously, you know, if you like, you know, luxury comforts that an STI doesn't have, but you're not buying that car for – those type of comforts. So, I mean, right now, if I'm going to go out, you know, on a Sunday drive, you know, find a mountain road or something like that, I take the STI. But, you know, I've had Mustang GTs in the past, and I'm just a driver. Like, if I can drive somewhere instead of fly, I'm going to drive. You know, I like being behind the wheel, just whether it's just driving or performance driving. I just like driving, you know. There's something, especially when I'm by myself, turn the radio on, and you can just clear your
therapeutic head.
You know? Yeah, it's therapeutic.
Car therapy. What about that older Boss 302? Did you like that?
I don't know. I'm a Mustang fan. I guess I'm kind of I've always been partial. I guess if I had to pick one, you know, the old GT500, you know, like Eleanor type.
Well, what about was it 2008 or 9 Boss 302? That's what I'm talking about.
I never got to drive one.
Really?
Yeah. No, I like the looks of them, but I actually never got to drive one. So.
All right, let's get to some more questions. Here's one for Jim. This is from Anthony Day. What's his take in the whole overlanding craze?
Ooh.
Does he anticipate major manufacturers making street legal side-by-sides? I don't even know what this question means. Honda had one at SEMA this year. $20,000 plus is a lot of money for something you can't drive around town. First of all, what is the overlanding craze? So, educate the Porsche people.
Overlanding is it's blown up in the last 3 years. So it's basically, you know, it's not necessarily like performance off-road driving like I'm doing, but overlanding, it's literally like, you know, you take a car and you outfit them. And like, have you seen any of those rigs now where it can be like old Broncos, sometimes they're Range Rovers, Land Cruisers, just, you know, even trucks, but they've got like the rack on the back with a tent that's up above the truck, you know, that folds up.
Oh, right. Yeah, oh, the camping deal, right.
Yeah, right.
That ends up on GearPatrol.com. And yeah, I love that
stuff. It's all the lights all over it. You know, it's like the camping rig on top of the truck and stuff like that. So overlanding, it's not necessarily like racing or anything. It's just going out for the weekend and, you know, you can, you know, go over just about anything in those rigs and then you just stop and camp. And then the next day you fold it all back up and just keep going. And like overlanding's just blown up the past couple of years. And everybody I talk to, they, you know, in the off-road space, they want to get involved.
Yeah, but why couldn't you drive that around town?
Oh, you can. I've got friends that have them, and that's their daily driver, you know?
Yeah, that's great.
I mean, if he's talking about side-by-sides, I think that's, you know what I mean? That's probably, you know, talking razors and stuff like that, you know? But actually, in Arizona, they're street legal, so I drive mine as a daily driver.
I could have used an overlander last night in the traffic on the west side of LA. I could have just
pulled off the side of the interstate and just camped out.
No, it's in my neighborhood. I couldn't get to my house. If you have seen Matt Farah's Safari 911 in person, can you comment on whether it was a mistake to do that to his clean 911? Be honest, I won't tell him. From CDN Wacko. Zuckerman, what do you think?
Oh, thank you.
Was it a mistake? No, you had a great take on this.
No, it's what was my take on it?
Your take was this is the purest Matt Farah that we've ever seen.
That's true.
This is a pure Matt Farah build, and you called him the hillbilly Hebrew, I believe.
Yeah. Well, it was a hillbilly Heeb.
Yes,
he's a redneck Heeb. I'll say it. And I did say that, and Matt said it himself, that this car was his personality on four wheels.
It really is.
It really is.
Yeah.
And so for him, it's perfect. For me, it wouldn't be for me, but for him, it's great. And
you couldn't do that. And he's so happy in
he's
it when you
so
see him.
Happy.
And it feels good to see your friend happy.
You can't argue with somebody who is 10 out of 10 happy. He got what he wanted.
Yes. There it is. That's a good one. All right. Here's another question for us to go with. All right. I don't want to do that question. Forget I even said that. This is a terrible question. Last episode, you guys said COA means nothing. What did you mean by this, and what do you look for instead? So they mean the certificate of authenticity that you can send your VIN number to Porsche, and they send you a little picture thing to frame, and it's got your original build options on it, color, transmission. I've had some interesting interactions with the COA department, Zuckerman. I've had, with respect to your RS.
Right.
I wrote them a letter and said, actually, it's got these things, not that. And then they said, okay, here's another COA. Wait a minute.
The older CMAs.
Just me saying it to you is going to change the COA?
In the olden days, the COAs were handwritten and much more detailed. You got real information. Today's little plaque that they give you that's laminated, okay, fine. But you still, it's just one little piece of the puzzle.
It is.
But it's hardly definitive.
Yeah. I think you could – I always think the engine number, the drivetrain, all that, all those numbers are accurate.
Right.
Other stuff – you know, the information is spotty, right? Yeah, it was written in pencil 100 years ago.
Old cars, if you're dealing in the 50s, it depends who was writing the shit down.
Right. All right. Rich Calafian wants to know, who would win at the racetrack, Spike, Zuckerman, or Seinfeld? I know the answer to this one.
Well, it wouldn't be Jerry. So we know who'd come in third, but I don't know.
I think we'd know who'd come in second,
too. Yeah.
I would be the fastest, but by no means a fast race. None of us are fast race car drivers, but I think I still have a little bit of crazy left in me.
Right. I would agree with that.
You guys ever go to like one of those, you need to go to like one of those karting facilities like the K1.
Oh, I've been to many of
them. Oh, it'd be fun to get all three of you guys in there and just.
We've done it.
Oh, have you?
Yeah. It's fun. It's super fun. But
so you can bump and bang on each other a bit.
Yeah, Jim Hall's racetrack. I've gone through their racing school three times. You know, and we did Skip Barber back in the day, and we were just up at Thermo. We do it, you know, it's now about not crashing our stuff and, you know, using somebody else's car. And then pushing that car rather than crashing our beautiful old things, right?
You guys ever want to go to Dirtfish in Seattle? They're a big partner of mine.
Okay, what is that?
It's a rally school up there.
Really?
Yeah, you get to drive rally cars. It's phenomenal.
What kind of cars?
Dirtfish sounds wonderful.
All Subaru, like all-wheel drive STIs, like 350 horsepower.
No kidding.
They actually teach you to rally through the woods and stuff like that. But there's open areas, so like you learn
trees.
To slide and things like that. Like you know, but it's
a
ton of fun.
Great.
Yeah, the owner Steve Rimmer is a really good friend of mine too. You guys would love him. He's got a car collection about 200 deep.
Rimmer, what's the job?
If you guys wanted to slide some stuff sideways, I would definitely be fun to get
totally
you guys linked
that.
Up
that
to
sounds
do
like
that.
A lot of fun.
And Seattle's just a fun town. So
yeah, I was just up there.
Let's
good
do it, Ferrison. I like
people.
The idea.
Yeah, we'll do. We could do a podcast up there.
At the Rimmer facility.
With Rimmer. Hey, Rimmer. Hey, Jim. Okay, I don't understand this question. Maybe you will. Sean Gardner. Hey, Jim, is birch your go-to building supply? Have you any experience with oak? Thank you. No separation between words.
Yeah, I think that was – he was trying to be a play on my last name as a joke. I have no idea who that was. You'll have to read my response.
Jim Beaver. Oh, that is so corny. Oh, it was so corny.
Oh, if you fell
read my response because I thought my response was halfway
decent.
You've
already answered the question. Oak is definitely where it's at. Pine is a bit cheaper, but damn, it is sticky dealing with the sap. Birch, nah, not my thing. You understood the Beaver joke. Were you ridiculed a lot with the last name Beaver?
I just roll with it now.
I would not fuck with a guy like you. I'm looking across the
table
and
I'm like,
why would I say anything to this guy that would make him remotely upset? That guy, you're in trouble for asking that question. Z, you obviously have many beautiful cars, and you obviously have good taste in money, but why does your house look like it's from the Golden Girls? Well, if you were listening to the podcast, his house burned down earlier.
No,
on,
he may be
he's talking about your little pied-a-terre, I think,
in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Which, in fact, the,
I like
one
house.
Of the first owners was Betty White.
It was?
Who doesn't
Betty,
like Betty White?
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding you. Betty White. So
that's why it
looks like the Golden Girls.
A Golden Girl lived there.
Yes.
Holy shit. Well, that's amazing. Well, it feels like a good
note. You just don't fuck with Betty White. She's literally like you just.
You know, Betty lives in my neighborhood now.
And she ain't going away.
No.
She's
going
to outlive you, Ferrison.
She lives in a cute little white house with yellow shutters.
Counting her money.
But there has not been much action. No. You know, when folks get a little older, there's always the little Toyota Celica in the driveway that the caretaker comes in, for the last few miles.
Oh.
That's
the last few miles. Ferrison, that's the most
that's
awful
the
thing you've said on
I'm
this.
Seeing there.
On
well,
this
I don't know anything. I don't know the woman. I don't
miles.
See her. But I'm just saying, I don't see her out there mowing her lawn or pushing the mower or doing anything like that, but I'm a huge fan. Well, gentlemen, we've lived today. We've laughed. We've opened up Jim Beaver in totally new ways.
Open the dam, and we're in the last few miles.
As usual, we've bought cars. We've bought Raptors. I want to get one of those Polaris things. I'm not pronouncing it right.
Polaris.
I like Polaris. But thanks for coming in, man. This has been a lot of fun. You've opened up a whole new little window into. To cars for us, the off-road good old boy network, and where is it? Gabs,
Nevada.
After
this, I'm
going
to retire there. You know, I think the three of us we could just go thirds on the town. And
why don't we take that little airplane of yours, Zuckerman, and fly to Gabs?
They probably do have a landing strip.
I'm going to call up the rabbi and Gabs and see if he can arrange for a tour of the synagogue, so we can be comfortable with the congregation.
There you go. Well, go ahead, Jim. Plug your stuff. Plug the podcast. Plug the radio.
Project Action here on Podcast One. Project Action here on Podcast One. My other show, the Down and Dirty Radio Show, is also available here on Podcast One as well. Go over there and subscribe on iTunes.
You're killing it.
Yeah, it's at JimBeaver15 on social media.
And Zuckerman.
You can find me at The Real Zuckerman on Instagram or Carpenter Zuckerman and Rally if you or one of your loved ones was injured in an accident.
And if you want to find me, for the next 5 hours, I'll be on Facebook, and then I'm finally deleting that shit because they are doing evil in the world. And after that, find me on Facebook Junior, Instagram, and let's hope that one doesn't go into the shitter either. All right, we'll see you next week on Spike's Car Radio.
Thanks for listening to Spike's Car Radio. Download new episodes every Wednesday on the Podcast One app or subscribe now at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.
It's me, Shaq, the general of Podcast One Sportsnet, your stop for the best sports podcasts. We've got it all in one place, from Steve Austin to Jim Harbaugh, Dan Patrick, the official Lakers podcast, and more. Podcast One Sportsnet is where it's all going down. So whatever sports you're watching or interviews you want to hear, or if you just want to laugh here, you know what off with my show. It's all happening here. Download the Podcast One app and click on Podcast One Sportsnet in the bottom right corner. I'm the general, and I'm ordering you to give it a try. You'll thank me later. And don't forget to listen to the Big Podcast with Shaq every Monday.